This is Anna Carmo with UN News. Southeast Asia has become the ground zero for the multi-billion dollar global internet scamming industry, according to the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, or UNODC. Transnational criminal groups working across the region are targeting victims around the world from so-called scam farms, which are operating clandestinely, often alongside legal businesses. Many of the workers are coerced into scamming activities against their will and can be tortured if they do not meet targets for stealing money from victims. Benedict Hoffman, the UNODC Deputy Regional Representative for Southeast Asia and the Pacific, visited a scam farm in the Philippines that was raided in March this year. Daniel Dickinson caught up with him there and began by asking him to describe what he saw.
So we're here in the northern Philippines, just a few hours north of Manila. And what we're witnessing here is basically a prime example of scam compound as they exist in many parts of the Philippines, but also in many other parts of Southeast Asia.
And can you describe the buildings that we have in front of us?
At the very back are the dormitories where people that work here live on a daily basis, where they take their food, where they sleep at night. Just in front of that, there's an administrative building. But then in between there's one building, which is the building that actually housed the gambling operation that was actually registered with the government. And this is the part that was known about previously that existed in this place. And that's also the part that was inspected by the regulator. But what's not visible to that regulator, at least on paper, are the buildings that are in between. And one of them we saw earlier, which was housing a range of computers and workstations manned by Vietnamese workers who were running scams from there, targeting the Vietnamese market. And what's visible here in the background, in these white buildings, is a similar arrangement, similar rows of computers, where Chinese workers, mainly Chinese workers, were conducting scams targeting the Chinese market. And then, separate from that, you have houses like the one that I'm standing in here, where the people that control this compound, the bosses as they call them, live with their families and where they do business and where they relax by the pool.
Is there anything that you've seen today which has surprised you?
One thing that's surprising if you walk through this compound is really the scale of it and the sophistication. This does not look very different from a well-established company, for example, an IT company in this part of the world. It's very well-built buildings, it's several stories of them, and if you walk between them, you really get a sense of the scale. And when this compound here was raided, there were about 600-700 people arrested who were working in here. Now, that's not a huge number compared to some other compounds that we know about, but it still tells you something about what's been going on here. And the other thing that's really surprising, in a way, is the difference between the lives of the people that were working in the back in these buildings and that were living in the back in these dormitories, and the sheer scale of wealth that's put on display out here by the people who were in charge of the compound.
And those people who are living in dormitories, are they, or were they, free to come and go as they pleased?
The way that these compounds work is that they bring the people here and they're basically fenced off from the outside world. In this compound here, you have everything that you need for your daily necessities. There's restaurants here, there's dormitories here, of course. But there are also barbershops and even a karaoke bar in the, as they call it, the quote-unquote mall that's at the front end of this compound here. And so people don't actually have to leave. They can stay here for weeks and weeks and months on end. But of course, where the problem is that even if they wanted to leave, they couldn't. And as we've heard from survivors, from people that were rescued from these centers, what's being done to keep them back and what's being done to them when they try to leave can be horrible. The experience that they live through really tell you and answer the question whether or not they can leave on their own will.
Their experience includes torture.
That's right. You know, whether it's in specific torture cells, as we've seen in a compound, right? Or whether it's just in their dormitories. The people here that live here, they're subjected to unimaginable violence on a daily basis. And that can be part of intimidating them or punishing them for wanting to leave, but it can be a simple thing that's not meeting their quota or as somehow otherwise not corresponding to what's expected of them while they work here. And they're being threatened both psychologically, but then also physically, and torture is a big part of that.
There's a huge amount of human suffering on this compound, but there's plenty more elsewhere.
What we have with these centers is the issue that there are different layers of victims here. There are the people who are here that we talk about that, you know, that are held here against their will, that are exposed to violence if they don't commit these scams, if they don't work here. But then, of course, you have at the receiving end of these scams, you have the people in countries that might be here in the Philippines or other parts of the region, but they might be much further away, including in Europe, including the US, receiving scam messages that at the end of the day come from here. Because what we see here in the Philippines and in other countries of Southeast Asia is really the ground zero for the global scamming industry. And it's really at the forefront of a lot of the technological developments that we're seeing deployed in scamming around the world now.
Who is behind these massive operations?
It's really organized criminal groups that are based in this region that are masterminding this. And they are the ones that essentially profit the most from them. They work with different actors. They might work with people who control territory, whether in, you know, in places like border areas in the Mekong, border areas of Myanmar, where different groups control territories and house these compounds, or they might work with local power structures. But in the end, these organized crime groups, you know, and they might be based in different parts of Southeast Asia, China, other parts of the region, they are the ones that really stand to gain the most, and they are the ones making the big money with this business.
This compound started off with internet scamming, but you believe that it has developed to include a lot of other crimes. What other crimes are we looking at that have been committed here?
So a lot of these places, and the compound that we're looking at here is relatively new, but a lot of the more established places in the Mekong especially, they started out as casinos tied into the regional money laundering cash flow, being part of the money laundering industry aimed at laundering proceeds from drug trafficking and other criminal activity in the region. But we've really seen that evolve, especially during COVID, where a lot of those casinos had to change their business model and moved into the online space. And we started to see more of the online scams, which were existing before, but at a much, much smaller scale. And from there, we've seen a further evolution, and we're continuing to see that change in how these places operate. And they take on and advertise very openly different forms of criminal activity. They're essentially turning into criminal service providers, providing services related to cybercrime, providing services related to scamming, providing services related to money laundering, but also data harvesting, disinformation, a whole range of activities that are for sale in these places. And the problem is we're only at the beginning of the real developments there. Because technology evolves so quickly and creates so many more opportunities using things like generative artificial intelligence that will really change the way that these places operate, and it really also opens new opportunities for them to make money. And if there's one thing that we've seen with these operations, with the groups behind them, if there's a way to make more money, they will find it. They're very good at that.
How scared should we be about what's happening now and what could happen in the future?
The technological change that's driving a lot of the innovation in here, and it's really, these are places of innovation in a way, because they're far ahead of other parts of the economy in many parts of this region here. And that change that we're seeing, it really doesn't bode well for the future, especially the adoption of artificial intelligence just expands the scope and the scale that a center like this can achieve and can operate on. In the future, you're not going to need 1,000 people to run scams on a text-based cell phone app. Even now, you have one person operating, you know, hundreds of SIM cards at the same time. But going forward, with artificial intelligence, you don't need anybody. You just need a well-programmed application to do it for you. And you can reach, with just one person programming it, millions of people. And that's where the real threat for the future lies. And the fact that all of this is happening online means that people around the world can be targeted with it.
How much does that concern you?
It's a great concern for us from the UNODC at the global level, given the implications for people around the world. But it also concerns us when we look at the region here, both because there are people here that are being scammed, that are being victims of this, but also because our job is to work with law enforcement, with regulators, with other parts of the government to address this threat. And what we see is a growing gap between the developments of these technologies and the speed at which they develop and the way that they're adopted by organized crime and the responses that governments in the region have at their disposal to address these issues.
You called Southeast Asia the ground zero for internet scamming. So this is a regional and a global problem that we're dealing with?
It is really a regional problem with global implications. The operations that we are seeing, they're predominantly still based in this region. We do see some signs of interest of expanding into other parts of the world, places that have similar compounds, like for example this one popping up in places like South America and Africa. But so far that's relatively limited. We continue to see operations here in the region targeting a global audience.
And how important is it for the countries in this region to be talking to each other? And how can UNODC facilitate that?
This issue is extremely complex, and there's no way for one country by itself in this region to address it. Not least because these operations, even if you address them in one place, they just move to another country where there's less enforcement pressure on them. So what's really needed is a regional response to this issue. And that's where UNODC comes in, to work with the countries, to bring them around the table, involve all the countries that need to be part of a solution, and get them to agree on priorities, and then work together to implement work plans around these priorities.
How much political will is there to actually do that?
We see a strong push in the region at the moment to address this issue. And there are different reasons for that, given implications for the populations in the region, but also the reputations of countries in the regions that are affected by this. And the one thing that we see as quite positive is the strong will towards cooperating with each other in the region. And we see countries as diverse as Philippines, countries in the Mekong, China, working together, conducting joint operations, discussing priorities, exchanging information at a scale that in the past was not the case. And so that's very positive. But at the same time, what we continue to see is a quite law enforcement focused response to these issues. And the problem with that is that if you raid a compound like this, chances are that there's another one somewhere down the road that just continues this kind of business.
So what gives you hope to carry on if it seems such an intractable problem?
It's really that the countries in the region are understanding that this is an issue and the political will that's there to address them that makes us see that there can be progress against this issue. It's a very complex issue. And if you look at capacities within Southeast Asia, for example, to address it, some places there's a lot of work to be done. But the more countries work together to share expertise, share information, and the more countries in the region also receive support by countries elsewhere in the world and by organizations like UNODC, the better they can be prepared to address this issue. And getting ahead of this issue will be incredibly difficult. And I think we have no illusions that that's something that will take a very long time, time that we don't have with this technological change. But at least we're seeing the countries move in the right direction.